So item number three is called Water Quality Issues, Accomplishments, and Work Ahead. And we're not going to be talking about this in the same order that it's presented in the staff report, mainly because we want Dominic Rock here to go first because he's got a commitment and we'll need to hightail out of here pretty soon after he's done. So what Dominic's going to be talking about is what we kind of work up to in this item number three, where we've talked about what the water quality issues are. We've talked about some of the longer and shorter term accomplishments of the Water Quality Control Board in the region. And then in doing that, we kind of point towards some of the high priority work that we see ahead. Three basin plan amendments we've discussed in here that we have on the books for future consideration by the board. One is on aquatic habitat protection. Another one is on recharge protection, groundwater recharge protection. And then the third one is really a kind of an umbrella or overarching basin plan amendment to basically construct our basin plan in a way that it recognizes our overall vision for watershed health. And that's what Dominic is going to be describing.
Thanks. Thank you very much, everyone. I guess this is recording. We hooked this up, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to hear my voice. I'm getting a nice little, this is like a monitor if you're into music, you know, because it bounces right back in my face. I can hear myself perfectly. But let me know if I don't speak loud enough because we don't have any microphone. But thank you all very much for this opportunity to talk to you about this watershed protection strategy. It's something we've obviously pretty excited about and working hard on. So I wanted to share a few things with you today. Kind of the broad strategy, as Roger mentioned, and then more specifically, some directions we're going with the basin planning itself. So, of course, it probably helps to start with our vision. So we'll talk a little bit about the vision and goals. And I don't know about the... there we go. Perfect.
Good.
The vision and goals. We'll talk about the watershed protection strategy itself. I'll be kind of laying that out in a flow chart, which I've actually provided in your packet. And then we'll be talking about the Basin Plan Amendment project itself. So the presentation will kind of have those three parts to it. So you're all familiar with the vision of healthy watersheds and the goals that we've developed, measurable goals associated with that for healthy aquatic habitat, clean groundwater, and proper land management. And when we first started using the terms measurable goals or describing these measurable goals and using the terms healthy watersheds, watershed protection, it was in the context of preparing stormwater management programs for our municipalities and talking to them about enrolling their programs under our general permit. And we found that sometimes our terminology didn't necessarily resonate with that audience. They kind of came back to us with questions about real basic questions about, you know, what kind of, how big of a watershed are you talking about? You know, as regulated municipalities, we only exist in one part of a much bigger watershed, so we can't be held accountable for what goes on outside of our jurisdiction. They asked things like, how will you know when the watershed is healthy? How will you know when we've done enough? They asked, you know, what's your evidence that there's a problem, that we have watershed degradation in our region? And, you know, they kind of summed it up with that. My favorite question or point is this a solution looking for a problem? So that always gets a regulator when he hears that. So I couldn't provide perfect, satisfactory answers for many of these questions, and that's reasonable. But it's important that we kind of develop the concept of watershed health a little farther. And so I developed some metrics or some basic, more descriptive pieces of the idea of watershed health. I called them desired conditions of healthy watersheds. And they basically describe surface runoff conditions, groundwater conditions, sediment, and habitat conditions. And we provided the municipalities, anyway, a description of these desired conditions and the possible quantitative measures that you could associate with different conditions as part of an outreach letter to the municipalities back in July of 2008. But when we talk about the desired surface water condition of a healthy watershed, we're speaking about rainfall in our region. It's all rainfall with a little bit of snow, but for the most part, rainfall, surface runoff that's happening at pre-development levels or in some kind of dynamic equilibrium with the landscape and receiving waters. We're also talking about groundwater conditions where watershed storage of runoff through infiltration and recharge and base flow from the groundwater to streams and surface waters and interflow at pre-development levels that sustain the physical and biological integrity of watersheds. Now, these two desired conditions of surface and groundwater constitute an important concept called the water balance. Probably not the first time you've heard about it, but in the context of watersheds, the water balance is just the balance between the inflow of water to a watershed as precipitation and the outflow of water from a watershed as evapotranspiration, stream flow, and groundwater discharge primarily. The key thing is it's really just an accounting tool for the hydrologic process in a watershed over time. But there are these three terms, the dominant terms within this equation where P is precipitation and all these other terms describe what's happening to that rainfall. Surface flow or stream flow and groundwater discharge and groundwater storage. Those are three key components of our desired conditions. And they suggest that in order to protect watersheds, we have to actually move into this realm of working with the water balance. It's really essential to maintain the physical and biological integrity of watersheds to consider the water balance. And it's the water board's ability to protect beneficial uses, whether they're municipal water supply or aquatic life uses, is really contingent upon our ability to maintain or support the maintenance of the water balance. But interestingly, you don't really see the term water balance in our regulations. You don't see it in our basin plan. You don't see it in most of our permits. And so shifting, for the water board to shift to a watershed health kind of concept and goal, is going to require that we actually change our basin plan, change the way we permit to embrace this idea of a water balance. And that shift is really a shift that is more in step with contemporary jurisprudence concerning public trust resources. And it's also consistent with longstanding scientific understanding of the relationship between water quality and water quantity. The other desired condition, the third one of the four I mentioned, is sediment. And here our desired condition is that a watercourse geomorphic regime would be in natural ranges. So there'd be stream banks that are stable within natural ranges. They aren't necessarily all stable all the time. But there'd be sediment supply and transport as well that more or less occurs within these ranges. And then the habitat conditions, for the time being, we're describing as the optimal habitat for aquatic and riparian habitats. And when I mention aquatic habitat, we have to think a little deeper and realize that that includes stream flow, because flow itself becomes the habitat for, say, an anadromous fish. In-channel habitat means all the features of a channel that provide, say, cover for fish. But the water column itself is actually the habitat of microorganisms and of fish as well. So the quality of the water and the biotic conditions are really kind of wrapped up in this concept of the desired condition. So we have the vision, we have the measurable goals, we have an emerging technical concept of a healthy watershed, and we've actually started to share this with the world. This letter was written from the board to stakeholders and decision makers outside or in our region. And you'll see that throughout the letter, this you might remember having read this or contributed to it, but there are terms like healthy watersheds and habitat, and the four conditions, groundwater, surface water, sediment, habitat, are reflected in the kind of rhetoric that we're sharing with the world. We also have a set of special projects within the office that are underway that took the measurable goals for clean groundwater, healthy habitat, and sustainable land use as points of departure So the groundwater recharge area protection basin plan amendment has been conceived. The riparian wetland protection basin plan amendment is being analyzed as well, and the basin plan amendment that I've been assigned is this watershed protection amendment. So typically when you step into the realm of new regulation and sort of new programmatic focus or shifting focus, a lot of times it's because there's a recognized, well-documented problem. The problem itself is a reflection of the failure of existing efforts. There's some urgency around the issue. And ultimately, in the case of the water boards, we then say, discharge or go fix that problem. This is typically kind of how it works. It should be fairly familiar to you, having worked with this water board. But the key here is that we've always focused our requirements on dischargers. And the concept of moving into watershed protection is going to really test our ability to look beyond dischargers and look at broad landscape management considerations. I'm going to present a picture to you, which is kind of scary. This is China. And here I think you could say we have a clearly recognizable problem, a very polluted water body. We can infer that whatever efforts are in place to prevent this aren't working. I would say there's no doubt about the urgency of it. I would hope that the Chinese officials feel the same way. And if we were the Chinese water board, we would know what to do. We would point. We would find the source of this urban slobber, and we would go to the source and tell the discharger to address it. But preserving watershed health is a fundamentally different challenge in the Central Coast. And I'll offer some opinion about this. It's not necessarily the facts or whatever. I just want to express that I think much of the problem with our ability to shift the focus on watershed health is because much of the problem is the future. It's really where are our watersheds going to go in the next 20, 30, 50 years with accommodating all the additional development that we know will happen. So in many cases, the problem hasn't occurred yet, and it's, of course, harder to get people to recognize a problem before it is right in front of them. Secondly, the impacts that do exist, I think in many cases, aren't necessarily perceived as needing urgent attention. So sending the message, for example, that we have widespread degradation of watersheds runs a bit counter to the regional identity of the Central Coast. As a region that's really not degraded, it's a region that's considered one of the unspoiled parts of California. Much to lose, but in many people's minds, really a beautiful place. So we have population centers like Santa Cruz and Monterey and San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara that boast sort of an environmentally progressive agendas. And we have cities like Salinas and the county of Monterey, which are proud of their general plans, as consider them to be smart growth general plans. And even in the, I'd say in the Central Coast, ag conservation or agricultural conservation is almost a land use paradigm in and of itself. So to succeed, I think, in getting people to recognize that there's a need for doing something, we really have to clearly define the problem of watershed degradation. And it won't be as easy as showing pictures like this. We need to be able to document the current expression of it and identify examples of watershed degradation that we aren't already addressing through one of our existing programs. So as you can see, I hope, there are many things about protecting watersheds that are different enough from the way we normally and historically have gone about our work that we need to develop an overall strategy. So that strategy is outlined in the first handout in your packet, and I'll begin to talk to you about that. This really is something I put together because it helps me organize the work that I'm doing on watershed basin plan amendment, watershed protection basin plan amendment, and puts it in the context of what all the other things that we're doing as an organization. And it should be, I should emphasize that this is not a bunch of new stuff. This is really an organizing set of organizing principles around things that we've already committed to doing and we're already doing. So It has basically three branches. Watershed protection, as I envision anyway, would set new policy and regulation. It could include revising existing policy, but in general, we're kind of taking some new ideas here. Secondly, we need to lay the groundwork, and thirdly, we need to align our own functions. So within that first bubble or cell of setting new policy and regulation, we would actually we would do the work of basin planning. We would develop new policies potentially. The groundwater section would lay the kind of the technical basis for succeeding with new regulation and new requirements, and the communication piece would really convey to the world that we are doing things slightly differently. And then the alignment branch would optimize our existing functions, sort of realign some of our programmatic activities, and then also create this learning organization to lead change, because we're talking about change, and we need to be the ones who lead that change. Putting it all together, you have really, a solid foundation for achieving the vision of healthy watersheds. And if you wanted to look into the handout right now, you'll see a bunch of cells with red and black writing here. And those are kind of a summary of some of the things we're already doing in black and some of the things that we could potentially begin doing in red. Before I kind of depart from these two sections, the two bubbles on the right, let me just kind of talk about them briefly. In terms of laying the groundwork, we've already started communicating to the world about our vision about healthy watersheds. We have the letter from the board that we've written. We've been asked to speak at a number of events. We've gone to many public agencies to describe to them watershed protection in the context of stormwater management. But the point here is really to go beyond some of our existing functions and really try to sell the broader concept of watershed protection. And I think it might require that we do something bold, like define the brand of watershed protection or evaluate community-based social marketing methods for sort of spreading the word about our new interest and our new direction. In terms of technical support, you're aware, of course, we already have an ambient monitoring program, a data architecture to support that. We've begun doing watershed-based TMDLs in the Santa Maria River. So we're actually already shifting some of our existing functions around watersheds. But we might also need to select, and I firmly believe we do need to select, multi-parameter metrics of watershed health to try to really relate our expectations to an outcome on the ground. In terms of alignment, you're probably familiar with the prioritization work that we've done. The staff report for item number 4 describes that in fair detail, where we've actually looked at the program function and tried to organize it and develop some performance measures around it. In most cases, there's been a watershed orientation to that, not as much in the groundwater department, but in the surface water there has been. But we could also communicate our expectations for the 401 program the way we did in stormwater. We could send out letters to projected applicants and explain, this is what we expect to see in your application for 401. In terms of a learning organization, I think you're all aware that we've had substantial training come to the water board that's really shared with us a whole paradigm on cognitive development and personal development. It's been very good for leadership training. And I think there ought to be a complement to that that's sort of focused on the watershed science itself. And we could combine these two and really create a learning organization where people know what they're doing every day they come to work and are excited about it. In terms of setting new policy, which is this left part of the branch, that's really all I'll spend most of the next few minutes talking about. But we've already started revising the agricultural order. We've adopted stormwater management plans, which embrace the concept of watershed-based stormwater management. We're moving in the same direction with the City of Salinas stormwater permit. And we've started preparing kind of a work plan to work on the recycled water policy, groundwater basin management plans, or salt and nutrient management plans. But like I said, this is not all a bunch of new information. It's really an attempt to organize all the work that we've been doing so far. So if you look at that flow chart, the one you have in your hands there, you see a lot more detail. And of course, there's a bigger story behind each little piece of text there. But let me go to the final section here and talk about the watershed basin plan amendment itself. So the goal of this project is to establish water board policy and requirements that really change the way land use planning is done, land use planning and approval, so that we can protect watersheds. We want to do that in a cup within the next 2 years. This goal might change as the fact-finding we do to develop these requirements changes, but we're going to start with this goal in mind of changing planning as it's done. And I'm going to propose that we do that in two steps, researching and developing the technical requirements of the policy, and then the writing and adopting of the policy itself. And I should tell you that this takes a lot longer just because of the process of adoption, public involvement, scientific peer review, and the full process of adopting and changing a basin plan. But we do have to spend some time doing some research and get our technical issues pretty much organized to support anything new. I have a second handout titled Flowchart Number 2, and it describes this process. It blows up this little flowchart into a few more branches. So like I said, the research piece is really the shorter of the two in terms of time frame. And I suspect we will want assistance from outside sources and possibly outsource some of the research questions, but we need to bring it all in within a short amount of time and develop a strong basis for anything we might think needs to be done. And we have a working hypothesis, and that is that our watersheds face degradation because land use planning, as currently practiced, fails to fully assess the impacts of land use on watershed function. The reason we're even talking about land use planning, however, is because land use planning can look beyond individual project parcels and look at larger landscapes. We have an abundance of parcel site level requirements that we issue permits for. Even our entire stormwater apparatus is built around new changes to the parcel and site level for new development. Nothing in our bag of tricks allows us to step away and look at the planning context, or nothing requires us to or requires others to outside of other policy and regulation. So the key here is to look at land use planning because it has this potential to go from the site to the broader landscape level. So the research questions are going to fall into three main areas. I don't know if you can see this, but policy, that's on your handout too. But so one area is policy planning and institutions. The other is watershed science, and the third is economics. In terms of planning, we all know that city planning, regional planning, environmental planning, short, long range, general, specific, all kinds of planning is happening out there. Specific or special area management planning is happening. All kinds of land use affected planning is happening. And our question really is to find out more about these and discover which aspects of the planning universe really involve watershed issues and maybe provide an opportunity for us to articulate some attention. With regards to policy, again, significant policy that is being placed on local jurisdictions, and counties and cities, special districts throughout the state of California. They have to meet housing goals, housing requirements. They have transportation requirements just to meet the infrastructural needs of what's there already and to plan for the future. Within the environmental policy realm, they have CEQA, Endangered Species Act, coastal zone requirements, greenhouse gas controls or policy. In natural resources, of course, there's surface mining, fishing game, urban water management, recycled water. There's no shortage of policies that are already out there that seem to be pointing toward watershed or at least environmental protection. Even the term watershed is becoming a part of the kind of the vernacular of environmental policy. So we need to look at these and consider to what extent some of them might be in the way of watershed protection, and probably more likely which ones can assist with watershed protection. In our county of San Luis Obispo, the counties are undertaking an effort really to grapple and confront the Senate Bill 375 requirements for climate change. And the local efforts propose to examine the effects of climate change on six key areas of the economy: water, health, infrastructure, agriculture, coastal marine environments, and tourism. And the goal, of course, is for the groups that are focusing this effort is to provide the cities and the county of San Luis Obispo with planning recommendations for water conservation, sustainable land use planning, and protection of aquifers. As you can see, there's a clear relationship between watershed protection and many of things that are just now starting in response to climate change. We need to understand these better before we start writing regulations, I think. Institutions. Who are the institutions that actually conduct planning activities and approve land use? Of course, they're municipal, county, regional, coastal commission. We have LAFCOs, which hold the purse strings for transportation dollars. We have financial institutions, which really, obviously, are we're exposed to their whims, as we all know from the current financial crisis. And of course, there are courts that have a significant impact on land use and on what we can accomplish in protecting the environment. So, who acts? Who decides? What are they doing wrong if they're doing anything wrong? So, planning policies and institution, that's the first big piece of the technical research issue. I'm proposing we form an external advisory group to make sure we have a full range of perspectives, assess the capacity of current land use planning, review some of these institutional and process models that are in place. We need to clearly define why the current approach is inadequate, evaluate some of the emerging approaches elsewhere, perhaps, and consider how they might work here, really define what it is we mean by a watershed-based land use planning, and then finally select in requirements. So that was that first little piece there. Now, within watershed science, we're up against some significant challenges as well, but I think they're the kind of challenges that we're really excited to pursue. The first might be defining the parameters of watershed health. So I was talking about the desired conditions of watershed health, but each of those conditions might be defined by a set of parameters, which really provide that scientific and technical basis for, say, a performance measure associated with a particular biological or physical or chemical endpoint. We need to describe our watershed conditions to some extent, at least to the extent that we can convey this is the problem we're trying to fix. We ought to be selecting the appropriate methods to sort of stratify our landscape, because we can't do everything exactly the same everywhere. And the key to a successful regulatory program are things like standards or numeric targets or performance measures. And ultimately, we need to be sure we can handle all the information that this kind of process is going to be relying upon. I think to illustrate the technical complexity of developing watershed protection requirements, you can look at one of the relatively simple tasks: selecting watershed classification schemes to focus protection at various levels. So why is this important? Well, it's important because not all watersheds are the same. Watersheds are nested within watersheds. We need to be clear about the framework, or the scale of analysis of all of our work. Just to take an example of the watersheds in our region, If you look at the region, you can break it up into 24 watersheds. In this case, the Salinas watershed is just one of those. But you could also break up the Salinas River into 14 separate sub-watersheds, the way you could develop. You could similarly do that with other watersheds. But you keep going with this because they can actually be broken up into 418, and those can be broken up into 15,452. And I personally delineated every single... No, I didn't. But that is kind of the scale issue that we really have to get a handle on. It's not an academic question at all. It is, in fact, kind of essential to the kind of watershed health we're trying to describe. What I want to measure in the Salinas River as an expression of the Salinas River watershed's health is going to be terribly, completely different than what I might want to look at in a small catchment in a part of Santa Cruz County somewhere on a coastal drainage. So we need to really clarify these parameter or these stratification methods that we use. Another big and tough question is developing these parameters, as I mentioned, the key parameters of watershed health. And staff has really taken a couple of angles on this. One is the work on multi-parameter metrics that we've done. They function kind of like indicators of health. Some thinking along these lines was done under Karen Worster's leadership last year, where she identified field measurements that could be integrated into a single score. So, for example, she took biostimulation as an index of oxygen saturation, nutrient chemistry, pH, and O2 saturation? I did. And chlorophyll, that was it. And she combined those into this particular index, and then she had other similarly developed indices for physical habitat and apparent habitat toxicity. And together, they all spoke of this aquatic health endpoint. So we have to develop parameters that we can do this for, and ultimately get to a place where we're actually saying this is the health of the watershed based on a new set of parameters. Another angle for developing key parameters was really to just put our heads together and consider what would sustainable land management metrics look like. So for urban parameters, we might say it's the percentage of new projects using low-impact development. It's not a, it's an on-the-ground measurement, but it's not an environmental endpoint. We might look at the amount of buffer zone we have for aquatic habitat. Within agriculture, there's questions we could ask about the relative percentage of land that has BMPs on it. These are the kinds of metrics that we could develop from a land use perspective. But regardless, really, let me keep going with that. Some of the questions that are begged by that approach are, they kind of keep the questions kind of cascade. Well, what percentage of riparian buffer is disturbed? You could probably answer that. What disturbance constitutes proper? That would be harder to answer. How do we define proper ag management? We're working on that. What percentage of irrigated lands discharge? Some of these are kind of measurable. Some of them are questions of, I guess, that have subjective aspects to them. But regardless of what parameters we select to describe watershed health, the questions will arise as to their viability and the reliability of them. And I think it's critical that we realize we're actually going to be doing this in an adaptive management framework. We're not going to get so far, call it done, and then proceed. We're going to be continuing to evolve and develop the appropriate metrics and trying to learn from the initial implementation or measurement of one set of metrics as to what might be better metrics down the road. So I've been talking about the work that we need to do to establish technical requirements for policy and regulation for our new regulations. So I mentioned the policy and planning, the watershed science, and third is this piece on economics. We are not economists at the Water Board. There is apparently a couple up at the State Board. Rumor has it. But the final branch of this effort, this economics piece, is really critical, partly because it is required by statute that we consider the economic effect of any new requirements. But I think it's partly because the Water Board is going to confront economic arguments at every turn for anything it does. And it's going to be the argument, the principal argument of folks who oppose our regulations. And it's important that we have an ability to counter those arguments, not to win them necessarily, but to counter them with a reasonable position. I think it's important to recognize that it's probably worth shifting the emphasis of the economic discussion from what are the costs on landowners, you know, farmers and municipalities today, to what are the avoided costs down the road tomorrow. And we're certainly considering those issues when we look at the possibility of wellhead treatment of groundwater that's polluted in our big agricultural regions. But we also are looking at it with respect to climate change. In fact, there was a report by an academic institution in the state, UC, reacting to climate change. They said that reacting to climate caused disasters like extreme weather, sea level rise, and wildfires will cost the state from $300 million to close to $4 billion a year, every year this century. So taking action to limit and prepare for climate change can reduce those costs. I think those kinds of arguments that look at a slightly longer-term economic question are worth considering. And that is really one of the things that's at the root of triple bottom line economic analyses. So it's something that we have to be versed on and willing to speak about. And of course, we'll also just be having to stay tuned to our regional economic forecast to see what is in fact economically viable in the present term. So based on the outcomes of the technical requirements, research and development in these areas, we will then attempt to write policy and regulation. And the couple of phases I have in mind for that involve developing a policy statement where we would recommend that the Water Board find watersheds in our region do face degradation to loss of physical and biological integrity. And we would recommend the Water Board, you know, potentially adopt resolutions that resolve taking actions, specific set of actions to ensure protection of beneficial uses through region-wide regulation. So the second phase would actually be to turn that into the Basin Plan Amendment, really make our document that we all live by reflect our new emphasis on whole watershed protection. And we kind of proposed a schedule, takes us out to the next couple of years. This, of course, is a fake bunch of X's in a schedule. But I have a separate real schedule that we can share at some later date. But we're looking at a couple of years of work on this. And that, in summary, would lead us to a project plan with specific tasks, roles, and schedules, and identification of resources that we need to accomplish this. And that is the extent of my presentation. So I can answer some questions, or however you want to conduct the
board questions. Any board questions or thoughts about? Are there any other regions going down a path similar to this?
Well, the regions 1 and 2 are adopting basin plan amendments for wetland and riparian habitat protection. And in so doing, they're adopting new water quality standards for flood plain or flood peak attenuation and watershed hydrology. So they're really moving in this direction. They've confined it to those two beneficial uses and a couple of water quality objectives associated with them and an implementation strategy that relies on existing permitting. But by changing their basin plan to include additional beneficial uses that really get at this issue of watershed protection and watershed protection, I think they're doing something like what we're doing.
And as you mentioned, we normally get at problems through dischargers and discharges. How is the board going to
get hold of land use practices that don't fall under one of our permits.
That's the rub. We have to explore all these options. Potentially, land use authorities, by making certain land use decisions, are impacting water quality. To the extent that a particular action results in an impact to water quality, I think it's subject to water board jurisdiction. The path and the particular mechanism and tools are yet to be identified. But it, in effect, it sounds like a permit or a prohibition or potentially programmatic cooperative arrangements. So, for example, throughout Santa Cruz County, the county and others have collaborated over the years. RCDs, stakeholders of all kinds, have collaborated for years in the San Lorenzo watershed to produce what amounts to a watershed protection strategy there. But there's no particular regulation in Santa Cruz Code that says protect the functional integrity of the San Lorenzo watershed. And so their capacity to fully enforce and succeed in a regulatory sense in implementing watershed protection in the San Lorenzo River watershed in particular really is uncertain. It could be that their collaborative efforts have gotten to a point where they're successful, but I don't think we have the measures, the performance goals associated with that effort to really know that. And you've certainly, the board has witnessed lots of controversy over things like timber, land use, water supply, groundwater contamination in those areas as well. So that's an example of things that are happening in the region that we really want to look at and look at what's working and what's not working. But did you want to jump in?
I was just going to add to that the language in the basin plan drives how we write permits. Drives the language in permits. So with these types of amendments, the new language in the basin plan, that language will then drive how we write permits and the requirements of the permits. So for example, right now we have our stormwater program where we've been pushing the municipalities in the direction of watershed protection for a couple of years now. We started out with, several years ago, we started out with the first step, which is mostly housekeeping. Street sweeping, things like that, requirements to cover that. Then we moved into low-impact development, where we were requiring municipalities to implement low-impact development on projects, and on projects of certain size. Now we've moved beyond that to hydromodification control. And all of this is pushing municipalities into a different scale. Instead of looking at just the housekeeping or the individual parcel that's being developed, to look at the overall city, how the city's being laid out, how it's being designed, how their infrastructure is being designed. And they're having to look at all these different factors, watershed scale factors, in order to do that. And we're getting, you know, we're having a lot of discussion with them about that and what it means. So the fourth step is active, conscious planning to protect watersheds. So we went from the housekeeping to the low impact development to hydromodification control, and now we're moving into watershed scale protection and design.
And for all, I follow that, and for all those things, we have swamps, which is our mechanism to try to get our desired goals.
Stormwater management plans.
Stormwater management plans. But, yeah, there's vast areas of counties that don't fall under a swamp. What would be kind of the mechanism to...
We'll be looking at different kinds of permits to cover those areas, so like watershed permits.
Can we create a permit? Do we have the power to say we are, from this point on, going to start issuing watershed protection permits?
We're talking to the EPA about doing that now. People at the EPA that are interested in those kinds of permits and developing those will. So we think we have the authority to do it, but we're going to be researching that and working with our legal counsel, State Board Counsel, to answer those questions.
Would it be helpful if we also tried to get legislative cover?
I'm sure it would be.
I mean, is there any discussion with the state board or anybody to help with that?
I know that there are discussions going on about changing Port of Cologne so that it becomes more of a watershed protection type legislation, but staff at the Water Board can't propose such legislation.
We also have the prohibition as a tool, so you have permitting, conditional waivers, permits, and prohibitions, and implementation strategies, all of which can be placed in a basin plan to kind of, as you pointed out, dictate how we use other permitting authorities. But the prohibition itself could be a unique and new beast.
Okay. And both the water code as well as our basin plan have language in them about land use activities that affect water quality. But it's not in a real articulated or cohesive manner that it's organized.
Now, part of the impression that we can get from this presentation or presentations like this is that we're going into a completely new area, land use management or land activities, regulating land activities. But the board already does regulate land activities. And we have many permits and where we regulate best management practices. You know, you'll find that term, best management practices, and definitions for what that means throughout the non-point source program and throughout the swamps, throughout the stormwater management plans. So that they're not new concepts. The state board's 2004 non-point source pollution program implementation policy says the board shall regulate management practices. You shall regulate land management activities and define what those things are. So it's not a new concept. As Roger said, there's already language like that in the basin plan, but it's not well defined. So we need to define what it actually means so that we can implement it.